calling this meeting to order of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District. Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum with all members present. Member Dr. Dierman is by teleconference with us tonight.
Thank you. Member Williams, can you read the board goals?
The Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Vision: the Mat-Su Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission: the Mat-Su Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs: we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial in student success. Core values: stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, commitment. Goals: we will improve student success, achievement, and performances by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Annual objectives and accountability, assessed by quarterly metric and timeline.
Thank you, Member Williams. I'd like to ask Kevin and Kedrick from Troop 395 to come forward and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you. Can we have an approval of the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to moving the agenda forward? Seeing no objection, we will move on with persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk.
Public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. There will be up to 1 hour for persons to be heard. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per board policy 1312, individuals testifying may not discuss complaints against individual employees. Specifically under the agenda item persons to be heard, the following guidelines apply. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributed to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard, or may be handled in executive session, or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. And this is the first half hour, and there are no persons signed up to be heard.
Is there any member of the public who would like to come forward and speak on items pertaining to education? All right, seeing none, we will move right on then. We don't have any administrative reports for this meeting, so we're moving to borough and city reports, and I see Mayor Cottle. Come on up.
Dr. Perromo, Madam President, board members, I'm glad I remembered which school to go to tonight, so I got here in time. That was my fault. Just a couple things tonight. Before I forget, I hope everybody has a good Christmas and a safe, happy, and New Year's. Three things tonight on my list. First is a Christmas friendship dinner will be on Christmas Day, because some people even ask about that, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Menard Sports Center. That's open to the public. Last year, we fed approximately 3,500 people inside the building during that four-hour time frame. Plus, we delivered over 500 meals in reference to Meals on Wheels. So if you'd like to help on that or participate in the dinner, you're more than welcome to come out. So that's Christmas Day, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Menard Sports Center. Second, the fireworks this year will be the same as last year. We'll be on New Year's Eve. It will be at 8 p.m., so it's early in the afternoon, and it will be at Adida Park. And we have lots of parking, and there will be a warm-up tent, hot cocoa, bracelets, glow-in-the-dark bracelets, things like that, as we've had in the past, and that's all free also. And then finally, this came up during your last meeting between you, this board and Borough Assembly, was entrance, exit, for the new Iditarod school, referenced the parking over there and things like that. So the borough and the city are working on a solution to address some of the concerns that were brought up during that meeting. So just to let you know, we did listen, and we are addressing what the concerns were. So I don't know if that's going to come up tonight or not, but we have been in contact with the borough, and we're working on a solution for that. All right, that's all I have. So thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anyone from Palmer, so we will move on to Student Advisory Board representative report. Member Williams.
The Student Advisory Board met at Pathways on December 11th. We were joined by Member Rutherford. It was a lovely meeting. And Member Welton. We discussed multiple issues coming up that we want to tackle. Students on the resolution committee are looking at multiple issues within our district. We are looking at planning a volunteer opportunity to take our student advisory board members to the Pioneer Home in Palmer for our January meeting to volunteer over there. We're very excited. We love going on field trips. That concluded our meeting.
Thank you, Member Williams. Superintendent.
Thank you, Madam President. Just very briefly, as you know, this is the last week of school calendar year, and our students will come back in January. Lots of fun times, I think, in middle school and elementary school, because it's time to just celebrate together. However, our high school kids are buckling down and studying as they have finals. Many of them started today. They move into Thursday and Friday. And so they're working hard and doing well, but I just wanted to remind everyone of that. In addition, I wanted to share just some successes in the district, specifically with federal programs. And we had announced this at one time, but just wanted the board to know the significance. We did win a grant for which we applied to the state for $1.5 million over 3 years. To invest in and try out some programs for mental health in our schools. And it's very timely for our district, I believe. It will entail bringing in mental health counselors, programs, assistance with students, as well as a coordinator. And that grant was put together by federal programs, won by federal programs, and they're coming, planning with the state to be able to infuse some assistance, both in wraparound services, things like that, in our classrooms, or rather in our schools, for those students in need. And it is federal money, correct? And so we were just happy to do that, and under the direction of Carl Chambly, that will be carried out. But that's pretty exciting, and we always do. I know that when we see concerns in our district, we look to those grants and things like that to really assist us in adding value to what we can offer our students. So that's pretty fun. Another significant occurrence was we had a team from our district, a middle school team from Academy Charter School, win the statewide Alaska Stock Market Portfolio Contest. And this contest and stock market game is sponsored by the Alaska Council on Economic Education. And it is actually for middle school up through college, as well as independent teams. And not only did the middle school from Academy Charter team name ZZ108 win first place overall due to their portfolio, they also took first place in middle school. And just to note again, they beat the college kids. So I'll just read a little bit about since the 1st of September, Team ZZ108's portfolio outperformed the S&P 500 index by 6.9%. The ending value of their portfolio was $106,628.33. At the end of the game, 63% of their portfolio was in stocks and 36% in cash. They were holding shares of Apple, Alibaba, Lockheed Martin, Vitae, and Microsoft. They followed a managed and balanced portfolio approach. They cut losses from Apple and Lockheed Martin and took profits in Alibaba, Exxon, and Lakeland Industries. And I want you to know that they basically, it's a simulation where they have to have earnings, they buy real stock, they follow the true stock market in those stocks. And so as the real market fluctuated, so did their portfolio, and they just had the right time to sell and the right time to buy, and these middle schoolers came out with a win across the state, beating UAA, UAF, and UAS students. So we want to congratulate them from Academy Charter. And with that, I would like to request Luke Fulp to come up, and he is just part of the budget presentation is just to reiterate and provide any additional information that the board may need in the updates provided with the budget revisions. Coming in January, we will have the FY16 budget for you. So we are moving right into next year. This will be the correction for this year now that we have a student count. Last board meeting, Luke did a full presentation, but he's just going to touch on some highlights and some questions that had come in to be sure that both publicly in our community as well as the board is aware of those changes. Mr. Fulp.
Thank you, Dr. Promo. Yes, just to reiterate on the winter revision, and we do have a presentation that's being pulled up, but this is not the presentation we're discussing, and we did the full presentation on the winter revision last time. If there's any questions on the winter revision, basically it's an adjustment for those members of the public who were not in attendance at our last regularly scheduled board meeting on December 3rd. It was a major adjustments, mainly due to enrollment through increased enrollment, 170 students above projected, as well as additional students within the intensive needs category receiving funding and increasing services in those areas. Along with those adjustments, and which was about $4 million increase to revenue, and commensurate increases on the expense side of the budget, we saw a PERS TERS on behalf contribution change of about $17 million. So that really changed the budget revision in large part. That on behalf, for anyone unfamiliar with it, is money in and out of our budget. It actually, the cash is never received here within our bank account, the school district's bank account. It is an adjustment on the state side, and it is a wash and net impact of zero to our budget. So it's an adjustment that we had to make based on actuarial rates set by the Division of Retirement and Benefits, and there's no net impact to our budget. But it is something that we have to account for and are required to account for within our financials. So the largest adjustment is really has no bearing necessarily on our finances, yet we're including it for completeness and because the state mandates that we do so. If there's any questions on the budget revision, I can answer those at the time. One thing that I want to note, I noted it on December 3rd, and I'd like to do so again, is that the original budget adopted by the board had 77.8% of all expenditures directed towards instruction. And with this revision, as more students came to the district, Dr. Promo, her key staff and instruction deployed additional teaching positions as soon as students registered for school and made sure that those additional students were supported in the classroom. With this budget revision, 79.12% of all of our expenses are in the area of instruction. So we actually bolstered that with this revision, and it's just proof, further proof, that the dollars that we're receiving from the state are following the students. So.
And just to put that in context, there are approximately 20 school districts out of the 53 that cannot make the state mandated 70% towards instruction due to the costs in their areas. So this is a gauge that we'd like to see as the funds should go to the classrooms where they're needed. Thank you.
Thanks.
We also, in addition, we do have prepared the PowerPoint from the other evening, and we wanted to allow the board, at the board's request, if you needed more information on the studies, we could have our human resource director, Katie Gardner, or on the building finances. There isn't much more information on there, but we thought that we would take another bite of the apple in case the board had more general questions before we move into the new year. Again, there are two studies that the RFP is already out and done and being filed, and the new one would come out in January, I believe.
Are there any questions for Mr. Fult from the board at this point? All right, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Fult. All right, Dr. Promo, do you have anything else on your?
No, madam, thank you.
All right, we'll move on to consent agenda.
I move the consent agenda, item A, the minutes December 3rd, 2014. Item B, 15-052, recommendation for certified new hires. Item C, 15-053, recommendation for rehire of retired teachers.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to passing this consent agenda? Member Rutherford.
I had a question on the certified new hires. And I apologize, I could have done this outside the meeting, but maybe others are curious. I hadn't seen before a special ed teacher who didn't show an actual certification in special ed. It was a science teacher, but for special ed. Was it just not on there? Is it something they're getting? Is that not required? I mean, I'm not questioning their qualification. It just, usually it says on there that they have some kind of special ed certification when they're being hired as a special ed teacher.
All right, Dr. Promo.
Good noticing. That's what we'd say in school. Good noticing. What happens many times when we do have unfilled special education positions and staff without the certifications, we do apply to the state to be allowed to allow a certified teacher take that spot. And they do work towards credits. I believe they take generally 3 to 6 credits to work towards that, that certification. So it does require special permission and a willingness for them to do it, yes. So in this case, I don't have the exact name, but that is customary for us to do, yes.
All right, is there any objection to moving this consent agenda? Seeing no objection, we will move that. Takes us to action items.
I move item A, 15-049, legislative priorities.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have an administrative report, or rather we had an administrative report last week, so I'm wondering if there's any questions or a further report.
Madam President, if the board would like, there was a question in regard to, can you please tell me, it's under 3B, and we've had a few requests on who is the National Council on Teacher Quality and what do they do? And so I would request Ms. Gardner to come forward to share some information on that group so that we all are under the same information. So since there were several questions specifically to that, I thought it would be prudent to do that. But other than that, we don't have Any more comments unless requested?
Good morning, board members. The National Council on Teacher Quality is a good evening. I said morning, didn't I? The National Council on Teacher Quality is a nonpartisan organization which promotes the increase in quality of teachers around the country. Their mission is to make sure that every student has a high-quality educator in front of them every day. That's their mission. At one point in time, they received a large grant from the U.S. Department of Education, but currently all of their funding is through private sources. They post all of that information on their website. I think the last year in which financial information was available, they received about $2 million in funds, and so they use that for a number of studies that they commission on an annual basis, and also to promote changes at the national, the state, and the local level. So that's really their focus, and that's what they do, but it's a nonpartisan group that's focused on making sure that the highest quality individuals are serving as teachers.
Member Larson.
The question's about tenure. Do they deal with that too on the national level?
They have recommendations. They have three goals specifically regarding what they are promoting in terms of tenure. And mostly it's focused on making sure that the decision for tenure includes some measure of performance or effectiveness, and also that the decision for tenure is one that is made intentionally and is not just a perfunctory after a certain amount of time you're automatically tenured, but it's a decision that's made intentionally and something that's earned. And then they also recommend that whatever the time period be for earning tenure, that at the state level or the local level, whoever's responsible for making that decision, it's different in different places, that be an adequate length of time to really make that decision. They recommend that at minimum that be 4 or 5 years, but they don't necessarily just want tenure to be 4 or 5 years. They want it to be a more of a discrete decision where you're looking specifically at how much time do you need to make that decision. And it may vary from state to state depending on, you know, what goes into the decision for tenure in that place.
Do they do that through studies, or, you know, say they make a recommendation for Alaska? How do they determine that? Do they just gather information? Do they do it through studies, or?
Well, they do a lot of research, and they gather a lot of research. But the National Council on Teacher Quality is a working group, essentially. And so they have individuals who've come together from a broad spectrum of individuals. They have teachers who are representative. They have teacher working groups that are represented. I'm sure they have administrators. They have community members and parents. It's a nonpartisan group. And so they pull information together and make recommendations. And then one of the publications that they're most known for is a document that they publish, or they have been publishing for the last few years on an annual basis, and it's kind of a report card of teacher quality in the states. And so they provide, okay, based on the goals that we believe are important in ensuring or improving teacher quality, then they rank states or school districts on how they're doing in accordance with the goals that they've developed. Tenure isn't really something where there's a right or wrong answer. It's, of course, a matter of opinion. And so this group has recommendations that they formulated over reviewing research and over the working groups that they've put together to analyze and explore what tenure is and how it should be determined.
Member Scott.
To your knowledge, the other districts or even states who are looking to simplify and clarify teacher tenure under law using the National Council on Teacher Quality for recommended changes?
I can't speak specifically as to if states have used the recommendations of the National Council on Teacher Quality as a reason why. I don't know how many. But it's a national publication that states are looking at, mostly because a lot of the recommendations that are written by this group are in very easy to understand terms. So a lot of states, a lot of organizations, education organizations, get a lot of pressure to really look at what this group recommends because it's pretty easy to understand. Some of the changes are kind of obvious and written in lay terms, I suppose, not necessarily what we talk about in terms of education ease. So I know that the State Board of Education in Alaska has looked at the recommendations that this group has put together, and their recommendations go far beyond tenure. They have a lot. Most of them are related to teacher certification as well as teacher preparation. So they also put pressure, I suppose you could say, for change at the university level as well. So there are a number of states that comply with the recommendations, so to speak, of the National Council on Teacher Quality. I can't say specifically that it's because of the study that they've done.
All right, are there any other questions for Ms. Gardner? All right, thank you. I have neglected to ask for public comment on the legislative priorities. So if there is any public comment, anyone who would like to speak on this issue, please come forward.
Red button. Can you hear me now? All right. My name is Tim Walters. I'm president of the Mat-Su Education Association, and I'm here to speak against a couple of the items on the legislative agenda because, as you've already heard from me or received my letter, they don't support teachers and they don't support the teaching profession. Firstly, tenure statutes don't really need to be fixed, simplified, or clarified. They're not hard to track, really. Look at the statutes regarding your budget. Look at how you guys track your budget. If you can track the budget and deal with those statutes, you can handle tenure. Tenure merely grants teachers basic due process rights and the rights to reemployment. And the reemployment guarantee isn't really there if the district is losing students and funding. We've got RIF statutes to cover that, and we'll get to that one also later. So what we're really talking about here is just some basic due process rights for teachers. 3 years for tenure in the state of Alaska is more than enough time to know if someone is meeting the standards or not, if administrators are doing their jobs, and that's the issue here. 3 years, guys, for those of you that have been in business, imagine looking at an employee and not knowing whether they're making the grade or not, and not knowing after 3 years, come on, that's not reasonable. If administrators are truly and effectively evaluating teachers, it shouldn't matter if the teacher changes buildings or not. If their administrators are all doing their job equally well, somebody transferring from one building to the next, you should know if they're making the grade or not. And if you're unsure, there's already something in statute that allows administrators to extend tenure if that person is somewhat questionable. It doesn't have to be. If they don't know if that person's on the bubble, you can already put tenure off. Our district, I believe, has done that. I know Anchorage has done that. It's been suggested here before. We don't need to change the tenure statutes. The NCTQ recommendations, that group is not nonpartisan. They are a HIT group, not HIT as in popular songs, but HIT as in quashing the teaching profession. They don't support the teaching profession at all. It's a little worrisome that you even bring that group up. They, in the circles of academia, they are not looked upon favorably at all. And in fact, yes, they did commission. They're not geared towards teacher quality. They've, with their first $5 million grant, I think they created an online system where teachers can now get certified to teach in just a few short, it's not a few short months, but it's about a year at a cheap price of $1,800. It's not about teacher quality. The priority to change RIF statutes also doesn't support teachers or the teaching profession. Right now, written into statute, we can RIF teachers, lay them off if our enrollment is going down, if the basic need of the district is going down, if we're hemorrhaging students and losing money and all that kind of stuff, which is not happening.
Mr. Walters, yes. Your 3 minutes are up. Can you wrap up really quick?
I will
All
quickly.
Right.
Yes, thank you so much. I know some of these priorities are popular with state legislators who haven't, as you guys who watched last year, aren't always friends of public education. They're not very supportive. And I'm sure priorities like this might curry some favor with those folks, but flat out, they don't support teachers. They don't support the profession. And I encourage you to not push these legislative priorities forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who would like to speak on this agenda item?
Members of the school board, my name is Garvin Bucaria. I suggest that Senator Dunleavy and Representative Gaddis be contacted to investigate this pressing question. Why, when the price of oil has dropped approximately half, are we paying such an exorbitant rate for fuel oil? I contacted one of the borough maintenance people tonight, and I was informed by him.
Excuse me. We're talking about our legislative priorities. This is the time to talk about that.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. The idea is to save this district boku bucks. And it involves what you folks are paying at a state rate for fuel oil for a number of your schools, our schools, which may be above and beyond what is the reasonable price based on the recent reduction in the oil price. That's essentially my comment.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who would like to speak? All right. Is there any questions from the board, further questions from the board to administration on this legislative priorities item? Member Michelson?
You know, I've got a quick question about one of the capital requests. I've got a quick question about one of the capital requests, number one, the teen leadership. Is, like, what students, what teachers, what schools, do we have any kind of idea on how expansive that might be? It says it's $250,000, and I'm not sure how widely that goes, and so I wanted to expand on that a little bit. Thanks.
Sure. Madam President, I request Jean Stone to come up and explain the, and just in general, what we like to ask for our capital requests are investment money that something wouldn't cost in the future. So technically, it's an investment in training of trainers and things like that for teen leadership. But Mr. Stone will share some of those, that idea.
Yeah, through the chair. Member Michelson, the teen leadership would really be focused on our all of our middle school programs, also in our outline, schools like Glacier View, Sioux Valley. They would also have access to that training. It's really an extension of the Capturing Kids' Hearts, which we've certainly made a substantial investment through Title IIA money and then also through legislative appropriation. The teen leadership is a component for those secondary schools to really build capacity, and students who traditionally wouldn't participate in what we would call leadership programs, your traditional student government advisory kinds of groups. And so what it does is it, and if you've had the opportunity to go to those, is it brings in kids who often are at-risk students, students who have potentially self-esteem issues, students who may have not ever seen themselves as leaders, and so builds capacity that way. My opportunity when I actually got to see the program had students that came and actually spoke. It was pretty impressive in terms of how those kids developed themselves in terms of public speaking, just how they can, and many of them had some very difficult story. So really it teaches resiliency, not just leadership, but resiliency in our youth, which as a district and as a board, we believe that it's very consistent with the mission, with our philosophy, and really what the board has tasked us to do with kids that are in those kinds of situations, that it isn't just about students that come from families with the capital take advantage of those kinds of things. And so
In regard to the exact target audience, of course, middle school plus outlying is about 3,000 students, but primarily this is for the curriculum, but it's really for the training of staff members. So it's building capacity in people who work with us, many, many teachers in those middle levels and schools, to be able to deliver the curriculum, to be able to be the teacher. But part of this program is being certified, so they have to go through the training themselves. So the lion's share of this is training to the adults that would do it. So how many adults would be trained?
Again, depending upon the size of school. So we would anticipate probably between 20 and 30 adults that mm-hmm. receive the training, along with some administrators that also receive the training. Not only is there a training component to that, but also the campus consulting that, there's 3 to 4 consulting visits that continue throughout the year, so that those professionals that implement the program can come in and see how the fidelity is looking and just ensure that a quality program is in place.
And it would occur in the summer, so we would want to provide honorariums to the teachers who give up their time, who are interested in this program. So it's the full scale beginning to end of implementation, which would be about over 1 to 3 years.
Member Walton.
To comment on this one, to ask questions, so it happens during the summer. Is this an elective credit, half credit? What is it that the students gain from this?
It would actually be through the president. It would be a class, a course that the students would take, but the summer part is for the staff, not the students. The students take a class during the school year, a class that they could take that they, if it was at high school, they would earn credit. As an elective, if it was in middle school, that's not credit driven, but it would be an opportunity to take the class and do that. What I was speaking to in the summer was strictly for professional development. Teachers don't like to leave their classes during the school year.
Mr. Stone, if we were to get this this money and send people, teachers, to be trained, how do we know we succeed? What's our outcome we're looking for?
Our outcome that we look for is it's twofold. It's the observations and that are shared upon the campus consulting visits, because we will measure the success of it. Also, it's just the participation in terms of the number of students and what. Those students who successfully complete the course. It's a year-long curriculum, and so it's not just a gimme. Those students are graded. They have to demonstrate proficiencies just like any other course. And when we're talking about preparing people for the workforce and career and all those things, it really is consistent with if they complete that course that they would be able to demonstrate that they can do many of those kinds of things that we would hope as we send kids into the workforce or as we ask them to be leaders in our schools.
All right. When we've implemented courses before, of course, you've always come to us with, we've done our research and we know that this works. Do we know this works to keep kids in school, to help them graduate? Why are we doing this?
As I shared, the research from the Flippin Group is they've captured kids who traditionally don't have access to these kinds of opportunities. So there really is an opportunity to grow leaders. And it's not just anecdotal. It's real numbers that the Flippin Group shows that they can.
Through the president, we can provide a report on that. We didn't bring the information with us, so we can provide that in Board Connect if you'd like.
I just think it would be good to have all of that when we go ask for the money. Member Larson.
I understand the whole concept. I like the concept, but how are we going to entice kids into this coursework? That may be at risk. Through guidance counseling, or how do we do this? How do we sell the program to the kids?
Yeah, so through the chair, Member Larson, the program isn't only for at-risk kids. It's a program that it's broad-based. It really tries to mesh kids together that who wouldn't normally, often our kids operate in what I would maybe say are kind of cliques, and really that's kind of what the design of that is. And so it's really targeted by administration, that the administrators get the training to really recruit and identify not only the right teacher, but also the right students, so that we know that we've been thoughtful in really who we're pulling into those classes. And so and it's not massive classes. It's typically going to be 1 to 2 teen leadership classes in a large school, probably 1 in a middle school. To answer your question, Member Larson, we don't have a guarantee in terms, just like a calculus class or any other class, but I really believe that that's a product of a good leadership, that they, if it's important to a leader, then you'll build it. It's just like our ANSET programs or any of our other programs. If we, as an administrator, have demonstrated that it's important, it's significant, it's valuable, then we don't have a problem getting kids into those programs.
Member Williams.
Would this program replace our traditional leadership classes and curriculum? Because if you put on a scheduled teen leadership and then leadership class, I could see some confusions.
No. This isn't a student government class. This is, everybody should have an opportunity to develop some kind of leadership qualities, whether it be through Toastmasters or any of those kinds of opportunities that really help develop us as, to become productive citizens. But it's just really a curriculum that it's titled Teen Leadership. It doesn't give them authority in terms of a government, a student government kind of a position. It just teaches them how to be good citizens, quality, and how to build capacity in others around them.
All right, Member Scott? Okay, all right, so if there's no more questions on number 1 on the capital requests, we can move on. Member Welton, do you have a question?
Not on the capital requests, I have.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Stone. We might call you back up. Member Scott.
It's probably for Mr. Stone again.
Oh, come on back up.
On our capital requests for our district-wide programs, number 2, Innovative Classroom, we're asking for $500,000 there. Could you give me a ballpark of how many classrooms we want to flip, and if we have an idea of the subjects for which we'll do that, and if they're subjects that students typically don't test as high in?
Through the chair, I can answer that this Innovative Classroom was my brainchild. So we, knowing that 21st century learning is important in our district, and that our kids are being challenged more when they leave us, and I just shared at the chamber today, we do look for kids to really fulfill, whether it's college or career readiness, go into a technical training. And the thing is this isn't really about not working with your hands or going to, that type of thing, because if you look, like our maintenance folks, they operate the lights in this building, the heat in this building, and all the HVAC on their iPhones. So even technical jobs are highly technical. So we really want to build capacity in all students through innovative classrooms. This year, just to incentivize some excitement amongst teachers and those that really stretch the envelope with 21st century learning, we offered an innovative classroom stipend to purchase technology, as well as kind of create some excitement in the room, we offered two of those, and really they were grants for about $25,000 each. This half a million is not necessarily for that. In regard to how many classrooms would you like to flip, if that is an effective learning modality for our teachers, there would be an unlimited number. You know, we have a teacher at Colony Middle School who has flipped her math class, her Algebra 1 class. We have other science classes, and basically in the idea of a flipped classroom is that the lecture or the demonstration that the teacher would do in front of the classroom is really filmed in short duration, 5 to 10 minutes, and it's put on file. Some of these are on YouTube. Some of them are just within our own system that the kids can log into. And then when they come to class, rather than sending them home with work and saying, okay, then the teacher works with them on projects and their homework. So just for the listening audience, that's a flipped classroom. There wouldn't be a limit. This, however, is additional funds to really challenge our learners and offer those teachers who step out and try new things innovatively to have the funds to honor them in their creativity. And so these funds would specifically go to classrooms of teachers to actually have an in-house grant, if you will, for that, to build capacity. So what they're asking for, though, are items and technology for students. So two classrooms are asking for one-to-one technology, so kids have an iPad in their hand, kids have a Surface in their hands, kids have these fancy microscopes in their hands and things like that. So the idea is there for what it would be, but the exact items aren't, because they're really to create a grant and have the teachers determine those. And just so you know, they are queried. There's about 10 people involved in ranking them, scoring them. The teachers have to highly explain them. It's a competitive grant for the teachers, and then there's follow through. So I don't know if that helps, but again, it's to create that excitement in our classrooms where that stuff takes place rather than at this level. Yeah.
Member Larson.
The two that grants that were put out for Innovative Classroom, is there going to be, one of the legislators asked me, is there going to be pictures or a report of those two classrooms of that grant, and what has return on investment, I guess. And they asked me if that's going to be part of our push for this.
Through the chair, the original two grants that we provided this year were internal, so they didn't come from any outside source. But of course, in the role of what we do about sharing the great things that teachers do, we would do a presentation on the change. Currently, what we're doing with the two classrooms that we have now is we're filming everything from going in and telling them that they won, the teachers and the kids are in the class and celebrating, to kind of have this time lapse of over time what it looks like. These first two, we wanted to be flashy, if you will. We wanted people to notice. We wanted to say, wow, this is a cool. We wanted, when you walk by, to go, hey, what happened in that classroom? That looks different. So they were on a much grander scale initially, but they were well received, with over 30 teachers in an 8-day time period turning in pretty extensive grants. And so we knew that the interest was there. Therefore, we place this on the schedule. And if we were to receive this Innovative Classroom, we would absolutely share with pictures, with stories, with teachers themselves, letting them know what the extra funds do for the learning that happens in their classrooms.
All right, Member Rutherford. You can go ahead and propose a new one.
I have a question and comment about the 3B and 4A, the tenure and the RIF items. Now, both of them are written fairly generally, so I don't have a specific problem with what's written there, although I think that we could expand a little more, and I'm wondering if there is an opportunity to do that. I had started putting some things in writing, but I didn't finish. An opportunity to bring forward, I mean, if there's a rush to get these out, like I said, they're written pretty generally, but if we have a chance to clarify them later. However, on 3B, I do have some concerns about specifically naming the National Council on Teacher Quality, because, you know, I looked at their website, and I then I read some articles that have been written about them, including someone who was on the foundation that formed the council, who now criticizes and questions the council's motives and methodology. And what I did find is some of their stuff is interesting. They just came out a week ago with a study giving Alaska's teacher preparation, you know, basically what we require to have teachers certified, and F. So I'll be interested, that was just last week, to see if our state responds to that at all. But the, and that's just on, you know, teacher prep requirements from, and I don't believe they were rating our university, they were rating our state's requirements. But what I did find is that they're somewhat controversial. Some people say their studies are studies, and some people say their studies are propaganda. So why can't we pull out some of their specific recommendations that we agree with and be a little more specific, where we can, I mean, we ought to be able to make our own case for why we agree with those recommendations. Can't we do that instead of naming what's obviously kind of a controversial group?
Member Rutherford, I know that we usually keep these very general because we watch what's going on down there, and it's lots easier to keep them general, and yeah. then we can focus as if something gets legs or if something you know is going one way or the other. Mm-hmm. The way I'm reading 3B, it says simplify and clarify teacher tenure under Alaska law to include the consideration of recommendations. So we don't say specific ones, mm-hmm. and we could certainly focus on specific ones and leave other ones off mm-hmm. in our lobbying if we choose to do that. I don't think we need to change the language, but if you would like to change the language, this is the time to do it.
Well, I'm you know, not advocating for being that specific on this piece of paper. I would just feel better if we as a group had agreed on these recommendations and could make our own case for them. I want to feel comfortable that I really do want them to consider all those recommendations, and I want to have my own reasons for it. You know what I mean? I mean, can we be prepared without turning this in? Can we prepare our own backup paper that if that does get legs, we've already talked about the recommendations that we want and why we want them?
Certainly. And we can discuss that.
Sort of being prepared just in case the teacher calls on you?
Oh, yeah.
To have your paper ready?
That'd be a good idea. Okay. Yeah, we do need to be consistent. Dr. Promo.
In regard to... I was on a conference call this morning with a person from the University of Alaska, and consequently they are totally revamping their teacher prep programs, and primarily it is to increase the rigor in order to get into the program. So after the first 2 years of general education requirements, they are in placing an assessment in the program so that in order to enter the teacher education program, that students must be of higher quality, and there'll be a cut score placed on that. And so that came out with the Alaska studies that the UA did. They had 7 recommendations, and that was one of them. And they are, particularly today, they talked about acting on that. And as one of those things, such as was mentioned tonight, to really increase the profession and the look at the profession, to have some standards of students who initially enter the teaching profession, to be sure that the content for which they're teaching, that they are actually strong on it prior to even getting into the College of Education. Now, already to be certified, there's praxis and things like that when they're done, but this is from general education requirements, a test that they must pass and I'm not sure of the date, but it is already in process. So that's interesting that I didn't notice that was in here, but our university did react to that.
Member Welton and then Member Michelson.
Okay, just a comment on the last comments there from Dr. Paramo. Yes, I've seen all the emails that are talking about the changes in the College of Education for teacher prep. I have a question about the teacher tenure, this item 3B again. In the response to answers to some questions, it says that the board did not support the resolution presented by AASB. AASB at the annual conference was unable to come up with a resolution on teacher tenure. And that's just to remind everybody that there was a lot of discussion. It just did not happen. Why was 3 years chosen in the first place? Most of us who work in business, you have a probationary period of 90 days, usually maybe even only 30 days. Why 3 years, and why now, you know, there's no number here, but we've heard numbers like 5 years or more. To be tenured at the university level is 6 to 8 years, depending on things. So why is it that we have to wait so long? I think the college level, because you had to produce and publish, but I think maybe 1 year might not be a good picture of what's going on, but why was 3 years chosen in the first place? Where did that come from? Is that just something it's been around for so long we've forgotten why?
Member Michelson.
I don't have an answer to that question, but I think it would be good for us, and I can't remember last year whether or not we had like talking points before we went to Juneau on trying to have a consistent message from the board. But I do like the idea of developing that, maybe for most of these priorities, something that we can all feel good about and can agree on and would promote when we go to Juneau. So I'd like to support Member Rutherford's suggestion of that. The other thing is that if we can get that short description of the teen leadership, I'd like to also suggest we could get a similar kind of a report on the team-based learning number 5 as well. I had some specific questions with regard to how that kind of fits in a traditional school. You talk about teams, I'm assuming that probably means maybe a little bit more time needs to be allotted to that kind of program in a school that has, 40-minute periods, 50-minute periods, or whatever. But it'd be nice to know a little bit more about that. But I would like to have a little more on that as well.
All right. And on our statewide salary and benefits 3B, Dr. Paramo, if you would enlighten us, we found some more information. Go ahead.
Light of the comments from Member Michelson as well as Rutherford, may I request Ms. Gardner to come forward and actually, rather than just referencing the council, be specific and see if any of these are something that the board does like or does not like. And so we have those three recommendations, and we are going to read them aloud and actually to help answer some of that as requested by our president, Ms. Pauger.
Thank you, through the chair. So the three recommendations that the council has come up with that we could certainly embed in the legislative priority rather than reference the council specifically, and I'll just read those aloud. Number one, a teacher should be eligible for tenure after a certain number of years of service, but tenure should not be granted automatically at that juncture. Number two, evidence of effectiveness should be the preponderant criteria for a tenure decision. And number three, the minimum years of service needed to achieve tenure should allow sufficient data to be accumulated on which the base, on which to base a tenure decision. The council goes on to say 4 or 5 years is the ideal minimum, but we had already mentioned in our talking points that that was not necessarily what we understood the board to be looking for, so we could leave that last sentence off.
Member Rutherford, would including those items with the 4 or 5 years, would including those items rather than recommendations made by the National Council on Teacher Quality, would that make you feel more comfortable?
It would. I still, they're pretty, especially number one is pretty vague. I still think we should be prepared with our common message on what we mean by that, mm-hmm. what we want. And in order to do that, we need to agree. So I think we should do a little work on that, but I do think it's better than mentioning the council. We don't even have to use their exact wording if we have something a little better, but.
Would you like to make a motion?
To change the, yes. I would like to make a motion to eliminate referencing the National Council on Teacher Quality and replace it with three priorities.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on that?
President Pauser, I'd like to make a discussion point, please.
Yes, go ahead.
I think that those three separate issues or separate items that Mrs. Gardner just read, each of them had a degree of merit to them on their own. And perhaps we could somehow consolidate them into one and come up with something that would stand credibly on its own that could become the legislative talking point. Because I personally have had a problem with 3 years, and I've been quite vocal about that. But I think that taking out this... the National Council on Teacher Quality is a good starting point. And again, if we could perhaps consolidate those three, that maybe we could all be in agreement over something.
Thank you, Dr. Dierman. Are there any other comments or discussion items on this? Member Welton?
I can support that amendment to add the three priorities and to take out recommendations by the National Council on Teacher Quality.
All right, so we would need to take a vote on this. Member Williams, did you have a discussion on this item? Did you have, okay. Member Williams, go ahead, please.
I had questions concerning the college and career bridge. I know, to me, first off,
Member Williams, we want to finish the 3B. We want to finish that, and then I'll get right to you.
No.
Okay, all right. 3B. Any other comments, Member Scott?
I'm just a little confused about we're removing the name of the council, yet we're still using their recommendations. I'm just having a hard time understanding.
I think because they have many other recommendations, it's the three that we specifically liked. Does that make any sense?
But when it comes time, you know, the question will be asked, well, on what have you based these recommendations on? We would come back and use this council as a reference point.
Member Rutherford.
We could, but we should, if we're recommending, if we are agreeing with them, we should have our own reasons. We shouldn't need to say because they said so. We should have our own backup. But have this action and this motion, does it allow the flexibility to have administration come up with a recommended sentence? As Dr. Dearman said, that perhaps consolidated it into one meaningful talking point?
Sure, we can ask administration to do that, yes. Member Larson?
I tend to agree with Member Scott on this issue. Whenever we talk to the legislative body, we come up with like these three items, and we usually tell them that it's from a study group or some sort of research base, and we would end up naming the research base. So I don't have a problem with leaving the name in. However, if we're going to use the three items strictly out of their research, I don't want to call them our own per se. You know, because they are our own, but we're using this research to say this is what we believe in. So you're kind of in a, I guess we're chasing a tail here, and that's why I agree with Member Rufford. I think we should leave it up to staff. They've heard what we've all said, and come up with, once this is approved, come up with a language that will kind of help everybody out on this, if that's possible.
Member Rutherford, would you like to amend your motion? And if we can have a second also?
Yes, because that was my point, was that I'm not sure I agree with all their methodology on their research. So I'm hoping we have our own, that we don't have to point to their research. We have our own solid reasons for these recommendations. And therefore, I would like staff to consolidate those recommendations into our own talking point.
Okay,
so can I amend that motion to, instead of replacing with those three specific bullet points as the council has,
okay. Have a suggestion. Maybe we can just amend 3B to say simplify and clarify teacher tenure under Alaska law, and then we will be able to work together and clarify and come up with different points to take as our talking points when we go down to Juneau. Does that sound good? Go ahead.
Just on a comment side, the addition was added so that there wouldn't be a belief that this board was interested in moving to 5 years or to remove tenure completely, which is what some states have done. So we wanted to not leave it as open, but we will come back with evidence of what this board does mean by that. But the intent by using the National Council on Teacher Quality was to communicate that it wasn't to remove it totally, and it wasn't to just select a year, a time. It was to add more. So I wanted to clarify that to this board, and that was the intention, which did not work. And so we will end it with leaving it more broad and then come back with ideas for which the board can consider of what that might mean.
Okay, to have that happen, we need to take a vote on what was already on the table. So, okay. Do you want to go ahead and withdraw then?
Yes, I can just withdraw that motion.
Right.
We need a different one.
Okay. Member Dearman, the second has to agree to withdraw.
Yes, I agree to withdraw based upon what Dr. Paramo said, yes.
All right, thank you. So that motion has been withdrawn. Do we have a further motion?
Yes, so now I move to end 3B at the word law and delete the rest of the sentence.
Is there a second? All right, seeing no second.
Well, she just wants to strike there, right?
Yes, she wants to strike after law.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion on that? Member Welton.
Do we need to clarify that there will be more coming from administration and presented to the board in the future concerning that?
I don't think we have to put that in the legislative priorities document.
Okay. But it's on the record now.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, seeing no more discussion on that item, we're going to take a voice vote that I had neglected to do earlier. Member Scott.
No.
This is for the amendment. Member Michelson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
And Member Dearman.
Yes.
I too vote yes. This item passes. The amendment of this item passes. All right, so we're moving on to other discussion on legislative priorities, and Member Williams had a item she wanted to bring up.
I would like to apologize for the earlier confusion. I have a question about the College and Career Bridge. To me, reading it, it sounds like a community college program. And I was just wondering, are similar programs already offered by post-secondary educational programs in the Valley to students who stay in the Valley after high school?
Through the president, it is quite similar, and it does have some. The goal is actually to have students successful in post-high school in those types of programs. The data that's coming back is that the primary stumbling block is not in the construct for which they're getting a certificate in, say, whether it's welding, vet tech, nursing. Those types of classes that actually contain the content, students do well. Where our students are struggling in getting associate's degrees is in the general education requirements. So this would be a partnership whereby we would work with the college for students that had this interest in moving forward for a certificate to offer the support in such that we do at the middle college in assisting kids, students, young adults, in getting general education requirements. The trade-off with the college would be they do not have large facilities, and we have a state-of-the-art career technical center. If they could offer courses in our building with our facilities, really our community's facilities, and the trade-off would be courses for general education requirements, we might work together in building the success of college. Currently, a third of the students who enter finish, and we want to build the capacity that our students will finish in the future. And again, the struggles and the data demonstrate in speaking with, I had a 2.5 hour meeting with President Gamble, who's now not going to be the president, but it was in the area of general education requirements. So yes, it is there. And yes, we are looking to have that partnership, and I've spoken just briefly with some ideas with President Kohlberg out at MATSU about how we can share resources, share expertise to build the capacity in some students who want to go and just struggle with some of the general education requirements. So it's a community college that would have a scaffolding effect for students who couldn't and quite make it on their own. So if that kind of helps, it's offering more opportunity for more kids. Many students will not select this. Many students will go off and do it on their own. But if they did have the potential, but sometimes struggle with those academics and support, perhaps if they don't have it. Most of these struggles come from students who are first-time college people in their families, where they don't have the cultural capital of college, and it would really be targeted to them. So that's a very good question.
Go ahead, Member Williams.
So if it's a partnership with the college, when you reach your 13th and 14th year and you graduated from high school, would you then begin to start paying tuition and transition into more of that college student phase?
Through the chair, it would depend on how the state legislature and the EED looked at graduation. Currently in some states, if you enter a more rigorous program, you have additional years. You wouldn't have to graduate in 4 years. So that if a student's goal was to enter a more rigorous program and leave high school with this type of certificate, they would be allowed to not graduate. If they did graduate and chose to graduate, they would be paying on their own. If they chose to spread out that learning over 5 years but not be considered a failure after four, they would remain as a public school student. Of course, that would take some changes in policy at the state level, whereby there are many states that have pioneered this area and their state has allowed it. But the condition was a good ranking, attendance. You know, there were things that the student had to follow. It wasn't a handheld, we'll do anything we can. It was, if you work hard enough, we will create the supports for you to finish. But it was under special permission. But that permission, due to EED's regulation of a student, once they start their 4 years ticking clock, they have to graduate or they're considered a non-graduate, we would need to change those laws in order for something like this to work.
All right. Are there any other questions or comments on legislative priorities from the board? All right. Seeing no more questions, we'll go to a vote. A yes vote would be to put our legislative priorities forward with the one amendment. So, Member Williams, advisory vote.
I feel like this has, I feel like there are a lot of more questions that could be answered. And as a lot of board members have said, they feel like they want their talking points to be clear and concise, so I vote no.
All right. Member Dearman.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Michelson.
Yes.
Member Scott.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
And I too vote yes. This moves forward as our legislative priorities. Our next agenda item, can someone move that, please?
I move action item B, 15-051, winter budget revisions.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We have had a couple reports on this item. Are there any questions, any further questions for administration?
Yeah, I had a discussion earlier with our chief administrator over the budget, and I had him clarify the last bullet point, and maybe he could come up and explain that.
All right.
If you would, please.
Why don't we ask for public comment while he's coming up? Is there any public comment on the budget revisions? Anyone from the public come up and speak on this item? All right, seeing none, we will move on to Member Larson's questions of administration.
Through the chair, the last bullet point, I'm assuming, I'm just looking for confirmation from Member Larson, is regarding the energy line item. That adjustment was based on a new methodology that we utilized and really new tools that we utilized in business services. We are now uploading all of our utility bills to SchoolDude, our not only our work order tracking system and maintenance, but it also allows us to track utility bills monthly regarding usage as well as the rates and the total bill amount. And so we have a lot of historical data that we can export out of SchoolDude, out of this system, and I sometimes just at a loss of words just based on the name of the system, but it is a very good functioning system, but it is called SchoolDude. And but we utilize SchoolDude to pull all of this data, and we have been able to pull actual usage over the a number of years, and we limited it to 3 years to make sure that we normalized any particularly cold or mild winters, and used a three-year average for utilization of these for all of the utilities. And then we also used, for the current year, we used our pricing that we've experienced over the first 5 months of the year to combine the factors to come up with a more accurate line item. And the reason why we did that is we don't want to be in a position at the end of the year explaining to the board why we have a large sum of additional funds in utilities, because we were not tracking that and looking at those costs as we were moving through the year. So this is part of sharpening the pencil, looking at the numbers, and just getting down to a more bare bones line item that we think is more accurate in terms of total expenses that we expect to spend.
Dr. Promo.
And this is in line with what our board has asked us to do. Not only for energy are we putting in the exact amounts and really studying those data. In the past, we would have to go off of averages. Same thing with individual teachers. We would go off of an average of a cost, when in reality, if we now combine the information with HR as well as budgeting to really say, what is the true cost? So we're getting better, and we have the technology now, and it's working to be a lot more exact, so that we can spend our money effectively and look for ways for which we can maximize, again, the goals. And if they turn out, that would be classroom, taking care of classrooms. And so I just appreciate the work. It took us a couple years to refine and to be sure that we wouldn't have errors, because of course we wouldn't want to come to you and say we don't have the money, but we are very confident that we can make these changes, personnel as well as this. So I just wanted to remind the board that personnel is also more exact.
Member Larson.
And the $380,000, that goes into the general budget, into or does it go into the reserve?
Through the chair, Member Larson, that those funds went to other areas of the budget. So we actually depleted the salary contingency reserve that we set up at the beginning of the year with the adopted budget amount of 1% of total salaries throughout the year. And this is what we should do with that salary and benefit contingency, is it should be depleted as we move through the year. It is for those things that we cannot project at the start of the year, the enrollment, the need to adjust for enrollment, and not knowing exactly what we'll receive from the state in terms of funding. So that's the buffer that we have for salary benefit contingency. But as we move through the year and we know the staffing that we have in place and the positions that we've hired, and the additional education that those teachers have received to obtain column movement or what have you, all of those contingencies should be taken into account as we move through the year. That line item is depleted, and we're moving the budgeted dollars to areas where we anticipate spending. In this case, the areas that we increased are the functional areas that we increased spending are function 100 through 400, which is the area of instruction. So.
Dr. Promo.
And to add on to that, as we move to the end of the year and this is completed, we will see a fund balance, knowing that we have worked it out with the borough that we can keep a majority of our fund balance. We are trying to grow that to be able to move that into that reserve into the next year's budget, knowing the price of oil currently, We want to keep our staff on board. We don't want to see reductions, and so we will move that. In addition, I guarantee you, you'll be presented at the end of the year, in moving into the end of the year, as items have cropped up and needs, board members have shared needs at different schools that they are hearing about, as principals report, CAPSIS reports of items, of capital items that they could improve at their school. A portion of that we will come to the board to ask for our improvement in our schools through capital, but we look to build that reserve now that there isn't a cap on it to be able to bring the Mat-Su Borough School District into the future without personnel cuts.
All right, are there any other questions, or is there any discussion from the board on this item? Seeing no discussion from the board, we will take a vote. Member Scott?
Yes.
Member Dearman?
Yes.
Member Michelson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
And a vote from Member Williams?
Yes.
And I too vote yes, so this item moves also. That takes us to future items, future business. We have canceled our January 7th meeting, and we will meet again on January 21st. That will be here at the central office. Is there any other future items or agenda items people would like to place on the agenda for future meetings? All right, that moves us to persons to be heard. The second persons to be heard, Member Welton.
The same rules apply. Speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker's limited to 3 minutes per meeting, and the speaker's limited to non-agenda items. And it should be general comments about education, related to education. And we ask that you make your comments appropriate for school-age children.
That was really good. It was really short. Okay. Are there any members of the public who would like to come forward and speak on non-agenda items?
Ms. Garvin Bucaria. I live at 530 East Carpenter Circle in Wasilla. Neither former students of Iditarod Elementary School nor I believe Iditarod Elementary School should be dropped from its educational role after 2016. The homeowners of the Iditarod Park subdivision believe charter schools do not have the significant funds to correct problems at Iditarod Elementary School. Renovations have not been adequately addressed for many years. Homeowners of Iditarod Park subdivision do not believe the elementary school should be converted to a public safety building because noise and disturbance will significantly impact the neighborhood. Traffic flow on Wasilla Fishhook will be frequently disrupted. Current public safety facilities have better access to major highways. Significant costs will be required to upgrade the system. As residents of the city, we homeowners do not want to see a further escalation of Wasilla city taxes. We homeowners wonder why the Borough School Board has not seen fit to meet at Iditarod Elementary School. And I understand from Principal Nelson, it has not occurred since he's been principal. In the mid to late 1980s, Alaska suffered a major downturn in its economic viability. Currently, 120,000 construction workers in Alaska could leave on short notice. Such folks are the first to leave. This happened when I was here. According to recent news reports, fully funding of the public health and human resources budget could utilize our current projected state income. With this in mind, and recognizing that 77% to 79% of the borough's expenses are in the instruction area, are we adequately funding building maintenance? How about this building, versus its sister structure in Wasilla? I refer to the original one and only Iditarod Elementary School. Concerning the latter, in 2010, the final list of State and of Alaska Department of Education and Early Development Capital Improvement Project identified $8,128,531 for Iditarod Elementary School interior renovation. I subsequently learned that this item on the wish list was not funded. What dollars have gone into improving the heating, air conditioning of this administration building, formerly Sherrod Elementary School? Are we to ignore Iditarod Elementary School? These are some of my concerns, and there are some savings that can be adjusted. About 4.5% of every breath the exchange rate in these buildings averages 10 minutes per hour. If we
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who would like to come forward and speak? All right, seeing none, we will move on to correspondence and board committee reports. Have there been any board committees meeting over the last 2 weeks? I don't believe we've had any board committees meet. Is there any correspondence for people to discuss? All right, we'll move on to comments from school board and administration. Dr. Paramo.
Mr. Fulp, do you have any comments? Mr. Stone?
Happy holidays.
All right. I do have one comment. I, again, always have an opportunity to speak, but we do have, I'm glad we're getting out early. Member Williams is taking finals tomorrow, and she has quite the IB courses and things like that. And I am an old Star Wars fan, so Member Williams, may the Force be with you.
Member Williams, your turn.
Thank you. I would like to wish everyone a happy holidays, and for those select eighth graders and high school students, good luck on our finals tomorrow. We'll survive the week. And other than that, our next next student advisory board meeting is in January on the 13th at Palmer High School, and we will be meeting from 9 to noon. Thank you.
Member Dearman.
Well, I'm here in rainy, cold Tucson, Arizona, and I'm sending everyone there the merriest of Christmas wishes and happy, happy New Year, and I will see you all on the 21st of January.
New Year.
Larry says Happy New Year as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Rutherford.
Just that I've truly enjoyed the holiday concerts and programs that I've been able to make it to. This time of year, it's difficult to get to the other end of the valley, so I hope others are making it to some of those concerts on the other end, but nothing puts you in the spirit like fifth graders squeaking through a band concert rendition of holiday carols and choirs singing their heart out for their parents and grandparents, and happy holidays.
Member Larson.
I agree with Member Rutherford. I've been to quite a few. I went to a kindergarten one today with three classes, and man, to watch them sing and try to keep them all on task was fun. Their singing was wonderful, and I've been to a few other that have been absolutely wonderful. Wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you next year.
Member Welton.
I I too went to quite a few things. I went to the Wasilla Middle School Choir and Wasilla High School Choir. The Wasilla High School Choir was took place over at First Presbyterian Church, and they filled it, and they have three choirs. It was huge. It was gigantic, and it was beautiful. They did a wonderful, wonderful job. Last night was the Burchell Dancers, but they also had the Iditarod Dancing Huskies were there, and that was the cutest thing. It was just wonderful. I sent pictures to Catherine, and hopefully she'll upload them. The doing the reindeer hokey pokey was so funny. You've got to see it. They also had the big giant reindeer with the two people inside it, and that was hilarious. You just couldn't help but laugh. I went to a boundary meeting last week. We'll be hearing the boundary report on the 21st. And Midnight Sun, Jeannie Trushinsky's class, sang for the Rotary Club today at noon. And that was really wonderful. And there was more students than there were Rotary Club members, so it was kind of funny. And today I also had the intense pleasure, honor, to be at the first graduation of the day school. And we had three graduates, and it was wonderful. And it was just really spectacular. So there are our first graduates of 2015. Thank you, and you guys all have a wonderful holiday, Christmas, Hanukkah, other celebrations, and the new year, and I ask you all to be mindful of just how much we have. Thank you.
Member Michelson.
I'll extend my holiday greetings to everybody, and thank you for the nice gift here. And I wasn't able to make it to a lot of programs, but I was able to make it to a kindergarten classroom on Monday and got to read Christmas stories to young children, which was kind of refreshing. And I was also impressed with the quality of the sound system in that particular classroom at Pioneer Peak. Really, really an excellent. I was there as a parent when we installed the first iteration of that technology, but it's just really super now. So anyway, that's it for me.
Member Scott.
Just want to recognize Wasilla Mayor Bert Cottle for his consistency in attending our meetings. I know you made that promise to us, and he's followed us all the way from this building over to Denine Elementary back to the borough. So I thank you for that. And also would like to recognize City of Wasilla Council Member in attendance today, Gretchen Obar. Thank you for attending. And for your monthly Inupiaq language lesson, Kuvinerli Rayunik Patlik. Merry Christmas.
Wow, thank you. I don't think I'm going to try that without a lot of practice. I wanted to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. Good luck to all of the high school students who are taking their finals. Good luck, Member Williams. I'd like to congratulate the Scouts. They made it through the whole meeting. So Merry Christmas. We will be going into executive session, matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal course, counsel, or pending litigation. We're going into executive session to discuss the superintendent evaluation. In with us in executive session will be the board, Dr. Paramo, and Katie Gardner.
I so move.
Second.
Moved and seconded. We're going into executive session.